I'm Pat Callahan.
And I'm Joe Torti, and today on a three and out edition of This Week in Pro Football.
After 2 weeks ago deciding the playoffs weren't even worth it, the fan base is now debating a new parade route.
What to do with that rascal Russell Wilson? G. Cobb gives us a blueprint for slowing down the elusive, hard-throwing QB.
Sal Powell previews Wildcard Weekend, and we look back on a decade of the NFL's best and worst.
We glance back at 2019, look ahead to the 2020 quarterback free agent class, and the cold miser is back right now on This Week in Pro Football.
This Week in Pro Football.
Don't make me sock you.
This Week in Pro Football.
Leave it up. We ain't on three. One, two, three.
Hardest-hitting football show in Philadelphia.
Expert guests.
Featuring weekly correspondent Sal Palantonio, taking you inside the Eagles and the entire NFL.
That's what you want. You come this far, you play with trust, you play with confidence, and you play physical.
It's This Week in Pro Football.
Are you ready for some football?
And now, Pat Callahan.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the wild card edition of This Week in Pro Football on 97.5 The Fanatic, the National Football League, and, of course, our friends here at Parks Casino, the sportsbook up here in Bensalem, PA, right off of I-95 on a very foggy Saturday morning. Morning, Joe Torti. How are you doing?
It was a dense fog, too, Pat. It was almost like, bowling with bumpers. Anytime I got too far off the side of the road, the fog was just like, no, Joe. Come on back in.
Yeah, it was a little dicey there, but luckily I live in Bucks County. It wasn't that big a commute for me, and I don't care how long it took you.
Well, of course. Right? Absolutely. I wouldn't expect any other way.
But it is a Saturday to be thinking some football, JT. We got the two best football viewing weekends of the year, I guess, would you say? It would be this week and next week. Four playoff games.
Yeah, these are my favorites, especially because you got games on Saturday and on Sunday. Right. You got the best teams that have survived till the end. And in a rare form, I do believe that all of the best teams made it. I don't feel like there's a team that's like,
See, right away,
elite level.
Right away, you got to hurl that gauntlet down, don't you?
I'm
you
got to
make that subliminal, snide remark air about my team. But okay, you may be right. You may certainly be right about that. But one thing, the other thing you can always count on is the early Saturday game, the Bill O'Brien Bowl. Saturday afternoon, the Houston Texans always will inherit or occupy that early slot when the ratings mean the least.
That is absolutely true. 100%. And they'll be facing off against an equal juggernaut in the
ratings. I was
going
to say, I'm shocked that isn't the Saturday night game, Buffalo-Houston. I thought that would, even though Houston, they're the third biggest TV market in the country.
I did know that, actually. I don't know.
They're not a nationwide team, certainly not like Tennessee is. Tennessee, of course, dragging New England into that Saturday night slot.
Yeah, New England appreciates that. They are just thankful for the opportunity there to be on prime time for once.
Yeah. But it's a... it's a busy day, and I tell you, there's four games. I think, Joe, you can make a case for all eight teams in these four games. There are two that are a little more prohibitive, but I think there's a lot to cull from the fact that, for instance, New England only a 5-point number over Tennessee.
Right. Yeah, and some of the other games that we've seen over the course of like the last 2 weeks. We've seen some massive numbers. We've seen, 16-point favorites, 15-point favorites. Now it seems like every game's going to be tight, at least if Vegas is correct. And then, of course, you've got so much on the line with now you're in the playoffs. You're not playing for draft position anymore or anything like that. And there are only a couple teams really left that have something to play for at the end. So certainly going to be a fantastic weekend, and it kicks off this afternoon.
Joey T, let's do a little social media here so we can get some activity going throughout all levels of both the sound and the internet. What do we got?
Yeah, catch up with Pat at TWIPF. Pat, I'm at Joe Torti, and Tyler Zulli producing this morning is at Tyler Zulli, Zulli.
I see. It's Penn Princeton Day.
It sure is. Yes.
There you go.
7 o'clock. Don't miss it. I assume that you're going to be in attendance.
Are you working that game?
I will be working that game, yes.
I love the Plestra. It's a great place to watch basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to take a break from football today? Of course.
No, we won't be. Yeah, I'll be there.
Definitely. I'll see you there. Yep.
The usual, Joe, it's an amazing thing. The NFL averages this every year in the playoffs, and this year did not disappoint. Five teams who made it last year did not make it this year.
Yes.
And it's always that 40 or so percent... attrition rate going in and out of the playoffs in the National Football League. The Rams, the Cowboys, the Bears, the Chargers, and the Colts decided to take the year off.
And when you look at it, only some of those teams you'd call like in quote-unquote tailspins, right? There are some teams in that group that are just going to be retooling. The Cowboys are in this nice will-they-won't-they game with Jason Garrett.
Yeah, that's amazing, Joe. That is amazing.
It's ESPN versus the Dallas Cowboys in terms of what's going on with the coach.
Yeah, that is really amazing. I don't know what's going on there. That's a very bizarro situation for the Dallas Cowboys. We'll get into that. Certainly, Joe, we got a million things to get into here over the next 3 hours. We have the usual suspects lined up. Gary Cobb's going to be joining us. And then we got Sal Powell.
Yes.
And at the end of the show, after the cold miser who has returned makes his picks, Paul Nolan will join us to tell us why Joe is wrong.
Yeah. I envisioned a scenario last week. My picks were kind of based, all of my picks were based on that scenario, and literally nothing happened even close to that. So I'm glad to be back where I belong, picking last here.
Will we see Mrs. Torty's picks again maybe before the next couple weeks?
There's a great
maybe
chance.
Wait for the
Super Bowl. We'll see.
So perhaps, Joe, the closest game of the week is the one that's going to take place here in Philadelphia. But I want to start with, you know, I can't seemingly let go of this. You know, this subject we brought up a couple weeks ago, which was, hey, Philly Eagle fans, you know, if they make it, is it a success, right? And
right.
I came back to it again last week, too, because I just felt that I was right. I mean, who doesn't? Everybody thinks they're right. But, I mean, I think clearly.
But now on further reflection, yeah, I assume that you're going to.
Upon further review, I know I'm right.
Oh, okay.
Right?
All right.
I know I'm right. And you can tell by the reaction. Now, let me ask you. Is this town fired up about tomorrow's game?
Moderately. The vibe that I've gotten this week. Is that it's been a moderate level
about
of fired up.
Yeah. What do you mean? Well, of course, you've been on the air a lot. I should defer to you. But, you know, I just sense from what I'm listening to is that, all right, the Seahawks, if they want to play, they can play, but then we're going to win that game with no trouble, and that, and then it's just a matter of who do we play in the second round.
Right. So, I mean, I still think that the logic that a lot of people called in and offered to you holds, where it's, you know, you can't necessarily call it a successful season if you're hosting a playoff game and you get beaten at home in the opening weekend. You know what I mean? So, like, people pointing to, yeah, they're going to beat Seattle, maybe that makes it a successful season because you win your home playoff game and then you go off to San Francisco, who for the entire season has been the best team in the NFC pretty much. You know, there's no shame in losing at San Francisco after that. You know, so I think that that's where people's minds are with respect to this game. But I do also think it's, if you get past Seattle, there's an element of, hey, anything can happen here. It's the playoffs.
Yeah. But I would say, to me, I'll stick with it. The season is a success. You made it. That's all. I mean, the only caveat I would give you, Joe, is if it was 49-6 tomorrow, then, you know, that would put a heck of a damper on the season. But I don't see that happening. And I think the object's to make it. I've said that now for 2 weeks. I guess that's enough.
I guess so.
I do believe that they're a playoff team. And at that game tomorrow, Joe, did you know my buddy Sal Powell, who's going to join us at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, he was kind enough to send this to me, that according to the ActionNetwork.com, Seattle is trending to be the most popular bet in NFL postseason history.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So it's going to be like 90% of the public money or something like that?
84% of the money up to when that was posted, which was like a day or so ago. 84% of the money is going to Seattle. Now, what I don't understand is why then Seattle hasn't become like a 3-point favorite. You figure with all that money going in, they're going to adjust the line and keep adjusting it until it leverages out.
Well, I would bet that there's a ton of sharp money that's going to come on the Eagles. I would bet at the end there's going to be the big fish that come in and lay the money on the Eagles, plus the points at home in a playoff situation. I would think that that's why Vegas has not yet adjusted that line.
All right.
Given the Eagles 3 or 3.5 at home is a big ask for the pros, let's say.
All right, let me lay out some. Well, first, before I get into that too much, how about we do our quick Week 17 overreaction here just to wrap up the regular season. And I will offer this to you two guys that I thought the Miami Dolphins, it was just fabulous the way they finished the season. I really do. I think Brian Flores just did a hell of a job in putting a dome over that locker room so that the players would not focus on the fact that everybody thought they were tanking and that they were the worst team in the history of the NFL. And to go into New England after losing 43-0 to them in week two in Miami. And he went in there with a purpose. And I thought that was just absolutely terrific that they went in there, won that game, cost themselves, who knows, Joey? I don't know how many draft positions they cost themselves by winning. But three is the Tyler.
Three is what Tyler says.
All I got to do is say it's Tyler's win.
He's got
it. To do that, I think, was just all that's right with the NFL.
Well, I think when you look at Brian Flores, it's a couple of things, right? He comes from New England, a winning culture. This idea of tanking is not really in his DNA. He understands that that's kind of the job that he was brought in to do this year, and that the team, like through the ownership all the way on down, had like a sponsored tank. So that, you know, you're getting rid of players and things like that. I don't think they plan on getting rid of Minkah Fitzpatrick because he's a younger player. But I think that that's part of it. It's not in his DNA to lay down and die. I think the players identified that by about week eight. That's when we started to see the Dolphins starting to show signs of life, at least in games. And then the other thing was, I think it was important for the players to say, hey, you're facing off against your old team. Everybody's writing us off like we're garbage and we're terrible. And they came out and responded big time. I think it speaks volumes to Brian Flores as a head coach and the Dolphins players who were still there that they responded that way. I agree with you. I think it was an awesome thing.
All right.
Tyler?
So I think that, you know, we're going to talk about it a little bit later, I think, with Brian Flores. I was thrilled with what he did. And you know, coming from a non-Dolphins fan, I've not been more impressed with a coach in quite some time. I think this team is on the right track to build quickly. They get themselves their quarterback maybe in the draft this year with one of their three picks. They could be headed in the right direction pretty fast.
As far as I'm concerned, Tyler, they don't need to make those picks. I'd package them all. Do whatever you've got to do to get up to the number one guy. If that's your guy, if you think it's Joe Burrow, like, to me, that's what you do. You take your one and whatever one of the other ones that you took and try to get up there.
Because Cincinnati's not going to give that pickup. They're not going to give that pickup. They're going to draft Burrow no matter what anybody offers them.
It's probably true. All right, so I'll go next. My Week 17 overreaction has to do with, as my colleague Pat Callahan would say, one of the most nondescript teams in the NFL, and that's those Tennessee Titans. I have to say, I was wrong about this team, like Tyler was, and Tyler talked about them being one of the worst teams, and then he said he came around on them. I'm actually going the other way. I think Tennessee's ready. I think Tennessee's ready to make some noise this year. I'm not saying that they're going to win the Super Bowl. The AFC's really tough. Like I said, I believe the Super Bowl winner is in the AFC. But I do think that they are not just a lucky, aw shucks, glad-to-be-here team. I think that they have a playoff-ready game and that they are a big-time threat to New England.
Yeah. All right, my answer to that is I have to agree with you. I you know, you say nondescript, you're right. Tennessee, they're just Tennessee, the whole AFC South. I mean, for God's sake, if ever a division needed a Tom Brady, it's the AFC South. They're all the same team. And this year, Tennessee, two AFC South teams in the playoffs. And but Tennessee's just a big, lumbering, nasty team, and it's going to be. I think they have a puncher's chance to win this game tonight. You just automatically seem to think to yourself, "Wow, New England, New England at home. Come on, but boy, I don't know. I think it's a matter of Tennessee will stick around in this game, and eventually 22 is going to wear that defense down."
I think what Tennessee told me more than anything is that they're not a bad football team. They're a bad Marcus Mariota. It's quite honestly, they made the right decision. I don't know if Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback of the future, but I do know that he is the quarterback of this game coming up. He gives them a great chance to win. I don't disagree with you guys. I think that that Tennessee has a real shot in this game.
Oh, boy, that draft class. Where is it? I'm trying to find that
draft class.
Marcus Mariota draft class.
But the 30-30...
all the rage.
The 30-30 club has been established, though. You know, yeah. The Total Solar Eclipse Club.
And no? The last play of the regular season, he does it. Yeah, and no one has... He has really patented that look coming off the field after he throws a pick six. Nobody looks more absolutely bewildered than Jameis Winston coming off the field after a pick six.
I thought I'd never see that look. I thought the Schaub had been retired, but now we have an heir to the throne, the pick six throne,
it's
Jameis Winston.
The Schaub.
Yeah, the
right.
Schaub is right.
So anyway, how about we have
Tyler's overreaction?
I'm sorry, Tyler, your overreaction.
So I know that the season hasn't even ended yet, and coaching carousel has really just begun. But the Washington Redskins have already won the coaching carousel for this year, by firing the entire top of the line staff that they've had. I think that Callahan really didn't do that good of a job, and neither did Jay Gruden. Bringing in Ron Rivera and then backing him up with a guy like Jack Del Rio to be his defensive coordinator, it's 173 wins combined as head coaches between the two of them. I think they're really put themselves in a good spot to get players that are going to respect defensive-minded guys. You've got Rivera as a defensive guy. Del Rio's a defensive guy. I think they're going to be a formidable coaching staff.
I thought the same thing, Tyler. I was looking at the rest of the coaching landscape, and I do think that there are some good potential head coaching candidates out there. But of the big name guys, like, I think Mike McCarthy's by far the worst of the coaches that you could potentially bring in. And Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio are two of the best, if for no other reason than they have been the architects of quick turnarounds. I'm not saying that those guys, their message lasts forever. They're going to be there for 6, 7, 8 years. But if you need to get some turnaround quickly, those are two guys who have done it with two different teams.
You still got that owner there. I mean, he's been the one constant since he took over, which has led to an absolutely shocking number of coaches and general managers since he got there. So I don't know. I think Rivera should have sat there. I think he could have had his choice of jobs. Mm. I think he would have stepped in well in Cleveland.
Makes sense.
And I don't understand. Well, who knows? I'm sure that Snyder overwhelmed him with the package.
That dude will write a check. Yeah. That is one thing that Daniel said. Yeah.
Tyler's point, I will say that's not an overreaction. They have substantially upgraded their coaching staff with the way they did it, and they brought a measure of sobriety into that locker room in that front office that was clearly missing. So I think I'd say this probably right now on the upswing, but I just don't know how much talent there is in Washington and whether it's not going to take a couple more years to get that straightened out.
This is sickening that we had three overreactions that we're all in agreement about. Those are just reactions then, if that's the case.
610-632-0975 to join us. Joey T, let me hit you with a couple of pros and cons here for what is a very, very close game, I think, tomorrow.
Okay.
And these are from the home team side, meaning it's here. Let me give you a couple pros. You tell me if you agree with them. I'll give you a couple cons as to whether the Eagles will win this game.
Got it.
It's a home game for Philadelphia. You can't deny that.
Okay. Yep, and they're good at home.
Tough to beat the same team twice in a season. You're a subscriber in that theory, right?
I am. Yeah. I am a subscriber. If the team's any good, yeah.
Seattle's beat up. I mean, they're beat up, but on the offensive line and running back.
Yep. I think those are two important areas for Seattle.
Very much so in the running back side.
Yeah.
And the other thing is momentum. The Eagles are 4-0 in their last four. Seattle 1-3. Right.
I think that that's less of a pro.
Right.
I do think the Eagles are hot, don't get me wrong, and I think that they're playing their best football at the absolute right time, to use the cliche. But Seattle fading a little bit down the stretch is a story, but it's not so much the record, considering outside of the Arizona game, they haven't really had any bad games. They haven't had a game where you're like, that was a god-awful
loss. You're right. It's typical Seattle games, always down to the final possession.
And it evened out. You talked about how good they were in those one-possession games. They just lost a bunch of one-possession games, so it evened out.
Isn't it amazing, though, Joe, how it happens? And you know, for one of the old saying, for one of a nail, a kingdom was lost, you know, one of those Aesop's fables. They get down to the one-yard line. They got time left on the clock. They're at the one-yard line. A guy gets hurt. And Russell Wilson, savvy guy that he is, he went back to that Seattle offensive lineman and said, get up and get to that line of scrimmage, which he does. But then when he spiked the ball, you could see the Seahawks acted like it was a timeout. And it wasn't.
Right.
And the clock starts running. And then Lynch was probably sitting back eating kettle or something. They said, get your helmet, get in there, and they end up with a delay of game penalty. Unbelievable. How many coaches do you need on a team to not do something stupid like that?
Well, you would think there's one guy, especially after the Marshawn Lynch debacle that resulted in Malcolm Butler interception and everything else, right? I would think at that point you hire one guy, and Pete Carroll sits a guy down and he says, all right, Pete, what can I do for you? It's like, this is a very complicated job, and it's hard to describe. You need me to stop me from doing anything stupid in the last 90 seconds. That's all you got to do. You got to make sure that everybody's on their P's and Q's in the last 90 seconds. And if I'm missing anything super obvious, make sure that that's called to my attention. Because that seems to be the issue for Seattle.
Unbelievable that happened again. And or if something like that happened again. You know, except the Seahawks, and as a result of all that, Joe, they go from being a 3 seed and hosting the 6 seed today to having to come on the road here to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's a big, big difference for them. And of course, San Francisco, They get them one seed throughout. But here's a couple cons I'll hit you with, okay?
Okay, yep.
Russell Wilson. I mean, I think he's a big con for the Eagles winning this game. A very, very savvy quarterback. Showed it again last Sunday night. Seattle 7-1 on the road in 19.
Mm-hmm. Very good road team. Yep. Yes. Including here in Philly. They beat Philly on the road.
And here's one for you. How long can this go on? I mean, what I mean is, the Eagles right now are just... I mean, is it reasonable to expect, Joe, that for a fifth straight week, guys who, 3 weeks ago, I think were working here at Parks Casino, are going to continue to make the kind of plays for the Eagles that are going to win them games?
It's a good question. I think at the skill positions, I believe it. I think that there's no problem in buying that Greg Ward and Boston Scott, for example, just are two guys that can continue to make plays because the structure so far for the Eagles has been good down the stretch. Now, the problem is Brandon Brooks goes on injured reserve. You don't know if you're going to have Lane Johnson here for any, impactful plays, because he might be out there, but he might not be Lane Johnson.
That's right.
Like, that's the question. Is the backbone of the team enough to survive?
At 40% of your offensive line. So, I mean, that is a factor for sure. That's a problem. But I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how long Boston Scott can continue to come out of literally nowhere and make the kind of plays he's making now, because you are materially stepping up in level of opposition now.
Well, right? I don't mean this to be offensive to any of the other players, but, like, I think that there's a blueprint for guys like Boston Scott to succeed. I mean, there's no reason that Darren Sproles ended up being as good as he was. There's no reason that Tariq Cohen was as effective as he was, outside of the fact that schemes and the way that the league is now, satellite backs are more capable of succeeding today than they've ever been because of what the rules are. So I don't see Boston Scott as a flash in the pan. If you want to say Greg Ward is, I might believe that, because Greg Ward's probably more of a slot receiver if he is an NFL wide receiver long term. Boston Scott's done enough to show me that he is an NFL back, and he's got a place in the Eagles' backfield.
The Eagles are apparently getting Miles Sanders back tomorrow, Joe. But, I mean, are they getting 100% Miles Sanders back?
He says no. He
right.
says they're
so
not
he
gonna...
says it, I guess that's about it.
That kind of solves that debate. Unless he's doing some kind of rope-a-dope situation. I do think the Eagles are limping to the finish line.
Yeah, and then Zach Ertz, they're just trying everything they can to get him to play. That's a dicey situation with a lacerated kidney.
I heard people questioning his toughness. And I'm like, early on in his career, he played through, like, a career-threatening injury, like, in year two or year three when he had a ton to play for. If he could be out there, he will be out there. Like, I don't think that there's any element of Zach Ertz taking it easy or trying to play it safe or play it cautious. I think it's going to be a question of, can he go or can he not go?
Right. Right. And it's critical for Philadelphia in the sense that Seattle, Joe, one of the worst teams in the league... defending tight ends. And so Seattle's 31st in the league in allowing receptions and yards gained by tight ends. So that would be somewhat of a factor if you could get a Pro Bowl tight end out there.
Some would say statistically significant. Yeah. That's what some would say.
Yeah. So it really is, to me, the closest. Would you agree it's probably the closest of the four games?
I think so. I think that it's either that game. The one that I look at, too, that I find to be interesting is Buffalo-Houston. I think that could be a tight one, too. But my gut tells me that this one has a great chance of being within whatever the spread ends up being by kickoff.
I'll tell you, I wish I knew who the cold miser was taking, because... I would influence I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to have to try and wring some hints out of you as to where you're going.
That's a shame I go last. Yeah, that's a shame. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I've been definitive as to what my pick would be. At least I was yesterday and the day before. Maybe I'll let you in on the secret. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli's producing. He's Pat Callahan. I'm Joe Torti. We are hanging out live at Parks Casino Sportsbook. It is This Week in Pro Football right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Callahan and Torty back here this week in pro football. 97.5 The Fanatic, live from the Parks Sportsbook here at the Parks Casino in Bensalem, PA. Joey T, we're at 610-632-0975. A very close game set for tomorrow. I'd like to get people, get our loyal listeners here checking in. What other game? You mentioned Buffalo, Tennessee. If there was one other game this weekend that you were looking forward to watching besides Philadelphia and Seattle, which is
Tennessee, New England, for sure.
Tennessee, New England.
Yeah, right. That's the game that I think is going to be the biggest one for me to watch. I think it has the biggest potential to be entertaining, especially if, like me, you're experiencing Patriots fatigue and you think that this could be it. I'm thinking this could be it.
Well, we should touch on that. But before I get to that, I just want to mention one other theory about, and I'm going to ask Sal about this when he joins us at 11 o'clock. And it's germane, obviously, to the Eagles game tomorrow. And Seattle is fascinating in the sense that they go out of their way to take the ball out of the hands of their best player, right? And it's a very novel way to win games. And they do it, and I can't argue that. But I've never seen a team try harder to establish the run, no matter what the hell's going on. You know what I mean?
And then
Sunday night, they're beaten by San Francisco. They decide, all right, Russell, go win the game. He throws two TD passes in the last 6 minutes and gets them to the 1 yard line. If they would just think of doing something similar for the first 54 minutes, I think this would be a very tough team to beat.
He's a special, special guy. I mean, you're not talking about three better quarterbacks in the league than Russell Wilson right now. Now, the problem is that the identity of the team, the identity of the coaching staff, the whole thing is all about balance, and it's about establishing the run and having Russell Wilson. You and I both talked about this last week, that in the event that they don't have any backs, which they don't really have any backs, they've got a couple guys who can do some things, but they don't have bell cow backs like Chris Carson.
Right.
You might want to have Russell Wilson throw the ball 45 or 50 times, and will they commit to doing that against this Philadelphia defense?
I know. I mean, the history tells you absolutely not, and that's in the Eagles' favor. The less the ball is in his hands, the better off the Eagles are, for sure. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Did you see, Joe, that the NFL's All-Pro teams were announced this week?
I saw that.
Lamar Jackson got 47 of 50 votes.
I saw that.
And the three guys who voted, Russell Wilson, he got the other three votes. It was Pat Kerwin of Sirius NFL, a longtime general manager, respected guy, right?
Before this, yeah.
Oh, God. The guy, what's his name? Jim Miller, the guy who used to coach for the Bears. Uh-huh. He also picked Wilson, and then Bill Pauley.
Hold on. By the way, expert-level quarterback evaluator, Jim Miller, by the way.
Torty is a little ornery this morning, folks, but...
Bill
Polian, who was now infamous for saying that Jackson should be converted to a wide receiver, he picked Russell Wilson, which really was a big mistake by Bill Polian. He should have just gone with...
You're doubling down.
Yeah, that's correct.
You've already apologized. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you voted for him, this wouldn't even be a story because he's already come out and been like, oh, yeah, I was wrong. Like, that was a big-time miss by me. But you're doubling down now. Like, there's no measure, not one, that you could look at and say Russell Wilson was a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson this year. You can say, you know, maybe he's good, maybe, but there's no statistical evidence that backs that up. There's no team evidence that backs that up. Lamar Jackson was a phenomenon this year.
He was.
And that would be like people not voting for Patrick Mahomes last year.
Yeah.
That's literally what it was.
Yeah, I think that was a little stubborn there on the part of Bill Polian.
Probably voted for him for wide receiver, though.
Just a mistake that he would do that. He could have wiped the slate clean and said, he's a guy. I'm eating my appropriate amount of crow, and we're done with this. But instead, he doubles down on it, like you said. And now he looks like he really looks dumb, I think.
Well, and especially since everybody, I believe, is associated there with Sirius, it's like, it looks like it's a solidarity thing.
Yeah, it does.
It looks like everybody's like, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I think that you should be able to vote for whomever you choose, right? But I do think that there needs to be some accountability. Like, why? What about Russell Wilson makes him a first team All-Pro as opposed to Lamar Jackson. It happened with Shaq Barrett, too. Did you see that?
Yep. Well, let's spend the next 6 minutes. Maybe we'll just touch base here. By the way, 610-632-0975. About New England. I mean, is this finally, Joey T? And I don't mean just even tonight, okay?
Right.
Look ahead to next September. I think I would offer, I would postulate that this is the end of New England. This is the end. You cannot go on forever with Brady and with Belichick. And I think Brady has diminished noticeably in 2019. And the talent around him, I mean, the Mohamed Sanu trade, everybody thought, oh, look at that, the rich get richer. Well, he really has had a marginal effect on the Patriots passing game. And I think it is coming to an end. And I think it could come to an end tonight.
I think that Bill Belichick, too, is kind of sick of it. I think that, like, the standards, quote-unquote, have been relaxed by Bill Belichick a lot. Say what you want about these guys, but, like, when you're bringing in Antonio Brown and you're bringing in Josh Gordon, it's not the same as bringing in, like, Takeo Spikes or, like, some of these other guys who you're like, huh, I've heard their names in the news before. In the past. Like, it's gotten so far removed from that you're, like, bringing in Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. Neither of those guys work out. Your guy, Bill Belichick's guy, Jimmy Garoppolo, forcibly traded to San Francisco when he didn't want that at all. Like, I do wonder if it's the end of Brady. I wonder if Belichick might test the waters somewhere else to see what else is going on. The only reason I even bring that up is because I read the fascinating story again about him resigning as the head coach of the New York Jets. Yeah. Like, there were a lot of different elements to this. I think you're right. The whole thing could fall apart. I don't know if either Brady or Belichick are lifers in New England anymore.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about that at some point in this three-hour extravaganza. The free agent quarterbacks, Tom Brady is one of them. And then, you know, the old where there's smoke, there's fire thing, when the Giants job opened up, and I admit, I said a few weeks ago on this show that I didn't think they were going to fire Pat Shurmur. And I'm not saying it was the right thing to do. I just think you fire coaches after 2 years, you just stamp your organization with an air of instability. It just never works. Teams just keep firing, and they never, you know, and hoping they're going to hit this lottery. You know what I mean? And you don't allow anything to take root. But anyway, the name Belichick started to surface there because of his ties to the Giants. And, you know, you just wonder if he isn't thinking like you're saying, like, man, let me get out of here while I still, you know, still theoretically on top.
Well, plus, nobody wants to talk about it. The Giants have some stuff. Like, there's some stuff there in the cupboard that if Bill Belichick got his hands on it, he might be able to turn it into some stuff. I think about Tom Brady, right? We talked about Philip Rivers, and is this the end for Rivers? The Los Angeles Chargers section, that is a layup for Los Angeles to try to get Tom Brady. That is a layup.
Yeah,
California kid,
right.
And everything.
California
like,
kid,
easy.
And they are absolutely desperate to make an impact in that new stadium.
It's a layup.
And there is no, you are exactly right. That is a match made in heaven for them. No matter how he plays,
right? Doesn't matter.
Assuming he played okay. We got Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you're right. That could be that would be a natural fit there for them. But you mentioned about the Giants. Yeah, there is something there. How much is there now in New England? It's kind of a veteran team, right?
It is.
You know, Edelman's taken a lot of hits. How many years really does he have to go? Sanu is no youngster. Their running back, you know, Michelle's okay, you know, but...
I think he's worse than okay. I think that's a first-round pick that hasn't gone, I hope.
Yeah.
You see how much Bill Belichick hates running an offense that doesn't have tight ends, right?
Yeah.
Hates it.
Yep.
Giants have tight ends.
Yep. And then their defense, New England's defense, you know, but let's face it, we said this all along, they feasted on that first half of competition in the first half of the season. I mean, they just feasted on it.
Yep.
And as the season went by, they're not a big defense, they're not heavy. And they started to get worn down, and no turnovers in the last two games. And now all of a sudden they're supposed to, like, you know, we're going to light this lamp now. We're gonna throw the switch
flip
now
the switch.
Tonight.
Yeah.
And we're going to hold Derrick Henry to 15 carries for 19 yards. I don't know.
Derrick Henry's got to be one of the three or four least popular guys to tackle in the entire NFL. Like, you'd have to think that that's one of the guys you really don't want any part of, especially New England's survived on run defense because their front has been good in run support. But if you get to that second level, there's nobody in that secondary that's interested in bringing down Derrick Henry. So that could be a big thing here today.
So listen, when you get back here, JT, how about we touch base on two things? One is, let's look at this coaching carousel again that Tyler already anointed Ron Rivera as 2020 Coach of the Year. So now that that's out of the way, we'll maybe look at some of these other jobs that are open. Then also, we have not yet mentioned the name of the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback playing his first postseason game.
Wow, is that a mistake? Flying under the radar? We got to get into it. 610-632-0975. Pat Callahan and Joe Torti. It's This Week in Pro Football on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Callahan and Torti are back here this week in Pro Football. 97.5 The Fanatic. He is the cold miser, but I just threw out my trivia question. Somebody call me, 610-632-0975. Torti already got it. He's just that kind of guy. So
no smartphone required.
No, nothing. I sat right next to him. He got it. So and the winner gets a, how about we give him a This Week in Pro Football, not available in stores, long sleeve t-shirt, right?
It's a nice item.
I'm
it's
modeling
a really
it right
good
now,
item.
And you just can't even believe how
you
nice
can't,
it is.
You can't wear it like Pat. It.
Tyler,
but, I mean.
Tyler's wearing it to his wedding, from what I understand.
Oh, is that the truth? Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes,
very
of course.
Good. Very good. Oh,
she's
go.
Wearing the hat.
Ah! The Jeff Mosher hat. Yes, of course.
The Jeff Mosher. See that? See that? Boy, I tell you, these prima donnas. These prima donnas who come on this program, I just can't make them happy, for God's sake.
It's impossible.
You know, it is. It is.
Just ask my wife. Let's go to Mitch in East Windsor on the phones on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, guys. Happy and healthy to see you guys.
Thank you, pal.
Thanks. I say if Folgers Philadelphia visit and the biggest, they can contain Russell Wilson, you got to like their chances. And what do you think about the Vikings? You think we can pull out the upset? I mean, they have some wide receivers. They have a great defensive line. Their wide receiver underrated. This guy, Kalen, I believe is his name.
Yeah,
he's
Adam Kalen.
He's
good. You got Stephon Diggs as well, who's a big-time player. I just the problem with the Vikings against the Saints is just that the Saints are rolling. That the only problem that you have is just that the Saints are absolutely rolling. They're so tough to beat at home. That's why I think you see the big number. I think there's a chance that Minnesota keeps it close. I think that's the best team.
The Saints do look like the best team. So I'm hoping they get upset. And of course, the Patriots.
You're rooting against the Pats, Mitch.
Of course. Oh,
All right.
I wonder if Mrs. Brady wants her husband home early for you know, start the vacation. Maybe that'd be possible. Maybe
she's I gotcha. And then, so Mitch, last thing before I hand you off to Pat for the trivia question, is you talked about containing Russell Wilson. When you say that, do you mean in the ground game? You mean in the pass game? What do you mean by limiting him?
He makes big plays. I would say more of it. I mean, he's getting a little old. He really doesn't want to run. But I say he makes, he's like a Dan Marino. And that's how Wentz is going to have to make everybody play better like Marino did back in his day. So that's what you got to hope for.
All right, Mitch, just one thing here, too, about it. You want to know why, you know, it's, I don't know, the Vikings. We haven't talked about the Vikings-Saints game. Kirk Cousins against teams that have won 12 or more games, Joey T, he is 0-15.
Is
now,
that all?
That is, I mean, is that, would that qualify as a trend? Perhaps?
Some would say
0-15 against teams with 12 wins.
Well, he's due to win. He's due to win one.
There you go. So that's yeah. Always the out. There's the out there, or due. Just like Houston, I guess, they're due. All right, Mitch, answer me this. For a fabulous This Week in Pro Football long-sleeve shirt not available in stores. Since the merger in 1970, what quarterback has led the most fourth quarter or overtime comebacks?
Joe Montana.
Ah, that's a good guess. That's
tried
the
to
one.
Two guesses
that's
in there.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, Mitch.
That was the Zuli guess. That is not correct because Montana was rarely behind in his great career with the Minnesota Vikings, San Francisco 49ers. 610-632-0975. All right. We mentioned about Carson Wentz. And
yes.
The fact is, this is his initial. First off, do you Do you put any significance on the fact that it is his initial playoff game? Will that affect him in any way?
I think so. I think it affects him a little bit, especially early on. I would anticipate in the first quarter, maybe the first drive. This is going to be one of those scenarios where you hear the you hear it in football, you hear it in hockey. You just want to get hit a little bit. I think Wentz will have a little bit of jitters because of the way that he prepares, the kind of personality he has, until somebody gets his hands on him or until he gets a little bit of a knock or something like that, and then it'll be fine. But I think it's natural ahead of your first postseason game to feel a little bit of that way. But he does have the veteran experience of playing for several years now where he might be able to turn it into just another game eventually.
Hey, I don't think it's going to impact him. I think the fact he's been playing so well in the last month will more than compensate for any first playoff game jitters that he's got. Wentz ended up, Joey, ninth in the league in passing in terms of yards. By the way, did you know the top five passers in terms of yards are all out of the playoffs?
Sitting home. That's exactly right. Yep.
It's funny for a league that's just an overwhelming passing league that the more yards you throw for, the less chances you're going to make the playoffs.
But then, there are people that still cling to that, and they say, well, you know, you pass to get ahead, and then you run, and these teams are all passing from behind. It's like, you know, doing backflips to fit their narrative that the running game is unimportant in the NFL.
But, you know, Wilson, he is, it's an odd thing. He is a contradiction. I just got done saying 10 minutes ago that the Seahawks, they go out of the way to take the ball out of his hands. And yet, if you take out those first five quarterbacks in terms of the most yards, the ones who didn't make the playoffs, guess who's next?
Oh, yeah.
Russell Wilson.
He's right there.
Yeah.
I mean,
Seattle, it's very odd. You don't think of them in this, but they're a big play passing offense.
Yeah. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, you've got guys who can get down the field.
Yeah, they lull you to sleep with that running game. First down run, second down run, first down run. Then all of a sudden, he does a little RPO thing, and he hits Lockett for 50 yards. And something the Eagles are going to have to be very mindful of tomorrow.
And I wanted to share this with you, kind of related to the philosophies of winning teams versus losing teams. This tweet comes from Field Yates. Not sure if you saw it. The 49ers, Ravens, Saints, Vikings, Packers, Chiefs, Patriots, and Bills are all playoff teams that rely heavily on a fullback in their offense. While not a glamorous position, the All-Pro would benefit from recognizing top fullbacks, a critical spot for top teams. People talking about it, and they're like, eh, well, you know, it's a passing league. Well, all the good teams have fullbacks.
That's
so there you
true.
Go.
Very true, too. Money, how it swings back. The pendulum will now swing completely back. You know, we're going to talk later in the show with Sal about the five things, our top five this week is going to be on the five, you know, most significant changes in the last decade of the NFL, both pro and con. Good changes, bad changes.
Yep.
You know, and that's going to make its way, I know, into mine, is that how the league has devalued running backs.
Really has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
really has devalued backs.
Yeah. And yet, look at that thing you just mentioned, you know, that having that fullback, the main benefit of having the fullback is what? It gives you that initial surge of blocking in the running game, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I saw somebody earlier, and I had to chew on it, and I couldn't figure it out. But now I think I have. They said that the presence of a fullback is the only thing that lets you be truly multiple in the NFL in 2019 and 2020. And the reason for that is that you do see teams that run out of the shotgun and stuff like that. It's usually like just a mix-up, as opposed to actually being able to deploy a completely different mindset offensively. The fullback's the only position that lets you really do smash mouth football at the highest level at the NFL.
Well, the other thing, there is one other way to do it. You mentioned it about 20 minutes ago, which is if you have two tight ends that
right.
are quasi wide receivers like New England had for those many, many years, that's an even more powerful way. The Eagles are close to it.
Yes.
If Ertz and Goddard maybe could beat, they'd have to beef up a little bit. If you think about Ertz and Goddard, the way they're built compared to, say, Gronkowski and Hernandez were, they're smaller. And Ertz, I don't want to say he's injury prone, but he is prone. He gets the ball a lot, he gets hit a lot.
He does. He's definitely the Aaron Hernandez of that pairing.
But the Eagles could, if they could ever beef those guys up enough, boy, that's powerful to have two tight ends that can catch the ball and block.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you saw what an appealing thing that was for Bill Belichick when they had that setup and how they kind of had to scramble to piece together offenses year on year after
yeah,
that?
No.
Is James White going to play a huge role? Is it Julian Edelman? Is it Sony
right.
Michel?
That's
like,
right.
They're
hey.
Trying to like.
How long can you
together?
Get away with that? And I think it's starting. The bill's starting to come due.
That's it.
But I think Wentz is going to play fine tomorrow. I do. I think he is not going to be an issue in the Eagles having trouble winning this game tomorrow. I think Wentz is going to be just fine. He's. I've always believed he's a, one of the Eagles may pick the right guy because the other team picked the wrong guy. And I think Wentz is a top level NFL quarterback. He's going to show it again tomorrow.
Oh boy, maybe Pat Callahan's tipping the pick segment for where he might be going here.
Why now? You got to tell me first. I got to know what you're doing first. All right.
610-632-0975. He's Pat Callahan. I'm Joe Torti on This Week in Pro Football, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.